In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode of Conspiracy Unlimited, the three secrets of Fatima and the Vatican deception.
One of the most prominent witnesses about this third secret is a man named Father Malachi Martin. He was in the Vatican during the time that these changes were taking place. And it involves two very specific things. Number one, that the world would see an amount of suffering that the world has never seen before. The second thing that he said about it is that it has to do with a wholesale apostasy in the church, throughout the church.
This podcast is brought to you by International Star Registry. Buying a unique and romantic Valentine's Day gift for that special someone can be incredibly difficult. It's a delicate balance of finding a thoughtful gift that isn't too expensive, but tells people that you really care. And let's face it, the same old flowers and candy just isn't special. Imagine counting down the days to February 14th, dreaming of romance, knowing you chose the perfect Valentine's Day gift. International Star Registry lets you name an actual star in the sky after your special someone. It's the most unique Valentine's Day gift of all time. This year, put love in the air. Name a star after someone you love. They'll remember it forever and never forget your special gift. The address is getarealstar.com. Getarealstar.com to give someone the gift of a real star in the sky. That address again, getarealstar.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Well, how are you? Great to be with you. A couple of weeks ago, I was asked to MC and present the North American premiere of a very interesting film called The Vatican Deception. And it's billed as a feature documentary about imminent global disaster, an unprecedented prophecy of hope, and the epic battle to conceal it. And it centers around the Marian apparition, that is, the Virgin Mary, who is said to have appeared before three young Portuguese children in the town of Fatima back in 1917. Over 100 years ago. And the Virgin Mary was said to have presented these three young children, one of whom, Lucia, would later become a Dorothean nun. And she presented these young children with three prophecies or secrets. The first one was a vision of hell, which reestablished sort of the orthodox or official version of what hell is, that it is permanent, that it is fire and brimstone. The second had to do with the end of the First World War and a prediction of a second greater war. The third prophecy has been shrouded in secrecy for many years. And the third and final secret was supposed to be released by the Vatican in 1960, just around the time of the Second Vatican Council, or Vatican II. But it wasn't released in 1960. And it wasn't until 40 years later that a part of the third secret, about 25 lines of the third secret, was released. But many researchers believe that they left out a big chunk of that third secret, because much of it, again, speaks of this apostasy inside the church, indicting the Vatican for falling away from the faith. And therein lies the deception. And I can't say enough about this film. And I'm not even Catholic, but to me, this film is more than just a documentary. It's a political thriller. Political thriller meets spiritual warfare. And the film also centers around the efforts of one Catholic priest, the late Father Nicholas Gruner of the Fatima Center, located in Fort Erie, Ontario, his efforts to pressure the Vatican to release the entire third secret, and the efforts then by the Vatican to silence Father Gruner. Here to discuss the Vatican deception is the director, Paul Stark. Paul Stark, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Richard.
So the film is The Vatican Deception. First, let me ask you why your interest in this film, which is really a political thriller. It's not just a documentary, but why did you pick this story? Are you a Catholic?
Yeah, I am a Catholic. And now I usually add to that by saying that although I am a Catholic, I actually took every effort to research this and to present the information in an objective way, and the way we did that was to show that there were two sides of a conflict in the Vatican, and we presented the evidence along with it.
Central to this story is the three secrets of Fatima, or at least let's talk about the Marian apparition to Lucia. Central to this story is the Marian apparition that appeared to thousands of people, tens of thousands of people in Fatima, Portugal, between May and October of 1917. So just set the stage for us in terms of the apparition of the Virgin Mary 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. So it last year we were celebrating the 100-year anniversary of these apparitions, and so as you were noting, the Blessed Virgin appeared to, or at least if I was to look at this objectively, I would say that the three children in Fatima, Portugal, were reporting that the Blessed Virgin was appearing to them. And the names of those children were Lucia, Jacinta, and Francisco. So Lucia was the oldest of the three, and the other two were her cousins. And so they were in the field on one of the properties of Lucia's father's or family, and they saw the first apparition there on May the 13th, 1917. And when they saw this apparition, or when they reported seeing this apparition, they claimed that it was the Blessed Virgin, and that she had asked them to come back every month on the same day at the same time for the next 5 months. And so this is what happened. Now, every time they came back, there was new information that they claimed to receive from the Blessed Virgin. So that's kind of it. Now,
right. How did she appear to them? Did they describe her appearance? Was she up in the air? Was she on the ground? Was she a full-on apparition? Was she diaphanous? How did she appear to them?
Yeah, so she was a full-on apparition, and they actually described her with great detail. They described what she was wearing. She had a mantle on. It was lined with gold on this, there was a seam of gold around it. I believe they were saying that they didn't see her hair because her mantle covered her head. Her garments went all the way down to her feet, but they saw her feet, and she appeared above a holm oak tree, which was about maybe 3 feet off of the ground. And whenever she appeared, the branches would bend, almost as if they were supporting her light weight. What else did they describe about her? They described her as very luminant, like almost made of light. And I remembered when I was reading the memoirs of these children, Jacinta couldn't stop talking about how beautiful she was. She was the most beautiful lady she had ever seen. That's how she described her.
Did she identify herself, or did they assume that this was the Blessed Virgin Mary?
That's a good question, actually. At the beginning, she did not identify herself. I think the children sensed who it was, but when they asked her who she was, she said, "Keep coming back here, and on the final day, I will tell you who I am and what I want."
And was that in October?
That's right, on October 13. And so on that day, she explained to them that she was the Lady of the Rosary, which is in Catholic, I guess in the Catholic faith, the Rosary is one of the most cherished prayers that they can pray.
Sure. And at what point did she appear to the masses?
She never did, actually. Only the three children could see her. And in fact, this is why over the months, people came to know something was going on. They came out into the field. They saw their own signs. You know, they saw some people said they saw a cloud over the holm oak tree where the Our Lady was appearing. Some people said that the sun was always dimmed so that they could actually look at it. There was, I think, one time when there were, I think it was rose petals falling from the sky or something. You know, I remember there were different signs like that. But the people never saw the Blessed Virgin. At one point, even some people said they could hear a tiny voice as though somebody was speaking out of a jar. But nobody actually saw her other than the three children. And so this is why over time, you know, some people believed that it was happening and some people were skeptic. They didn't think that it was actually taking place.
So now we get into the three secrets, which are central to your film, The Vatican
That's right.
Deception. The first secret is the Lady of the Rosary talking to the three children. Lucia, yeah. Jacinta, and Francisco about hell.
Yeah. She actually didn't speak about it. She actually showed them a vision. So the way the children described it is she opened her arms up. And as she did this, there was an energy that seemed to open the ground up. And the children looked down and they described it as though they were looking into a pit of hell, and they described the different creatures that they saw there. They said that they could distinguish the human forms from the demons, because the demons looked like you know, mixes of strange beasts, and they were also very specific in their description of how these how these forms, they look like bronze, like they were being consumed, or sorry, they were burning in flame, but never being consumed in this lake of fire. So it was a very specific vision that they saw.
And why was that important to show these three young Portuguese children these stark, rather gruesome and graphic images of eternal hellfire, do you think?
From my understanding of the research that I did, the prophecies were warning that people were falling into hell every day, and that the numbers of people falling into hell were going to grow over time. And so this vision, it seemed, was meant to be a warning to humanity that it's time for people to wake up, and that there would be a time when people would not believe in hell, and there would be a time when the Catholic Church would not teach about it. So that's my understanding of why she did that.
It's true that the concept or the idea of hell has been, I would say, severely watered down. It is an uncomfortable thing to discuss, this idea of eternal damnation and the agony of being constantly on fire but never consumed by the fire, that it's permanent. This has been watered down, perhaps even in statements by the Pope himself. Was this again to reconfirm the permanency and the existence of an actual place, hell?
Yeah, that's it exactly. And you're right, it has been watered down. I think the mentality of most Christians, and I don't say just Catholics, but I think it's all Christians, they have this sense that God is an all-loving, merciful God, and that he'll forgive us for what we do, no matter what that is. And that's not what the Catholic Church used to teach. The Catholic Church, obviously, and I think all Christian faiths for that matter, taught that that there is a hell and that people end up there, and we have to seek to try to avoid going there.
The second secret of Fatima that was released, that was revealed to these three children. Tell me about that. It has to do with the World War I, which is now, at this point, they're in the third year of the war in 1917. It has to do with war and also Russia. Tell me about the second secret.
Yeah, so the second secret, first of all, begins by explaining that the children saw hell and that that's where people were going, and that she came to prevent that. And so to prevent that, she said that she would return to ask for the consecration of Russia. And this consecration was also meant to prevent further devastations in the world. I'm trying to think. So now one of the things that was also predicted was the sign that would be seen in the sky that would be a signal that this worst war was going to start. And the sign that was described in this secret was what they call, in the secret it was called a strange light during the reign of Pope Pius XI, that would be the sign. And it's interesting to note that if you do a quick Google on this, you'll find that if you search Aurora Borealis and you check on the date January 25th, 1938, you'll find that there were several newspaper articles about a light in the sky that the scientists called Aurora Borealis, but it was seen on five different continents. And in England, they actually thought Windsor Castle was burning down. That's how bright these lights were. And they actually dispatched the fire department to go out and to put out this flame that didn't exist.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, one strange thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
There's a really powerful scene in your movie, The Vatican Deception, where a former SS security guard serving Adolf Hitler is recounting Hitler and himself and a young Hungarian woman being out on a veranda looking up at the sky on this particular night. And you explain what the SS guard, what he heard and what he saw.
Yeah, so they were on the esplanade of I guess they called it the Wolf's Lair, which is a place where Hitler would meet with his cabinet in the mountains, the Bavarian mountains. And they were looking out into the sky, and this SS guard said that when Hitler saw these signs in the sky, he saw it as a sign that it was time to wage war, because what Hitler said was, "Now we will shed blood." And the way the SS guard describes it, he said that Hitler looked crazed all of a sudden. You know, it was very intimidating. People were very nervous because they saw how he was reacting to this. And so it does seem as though that particular sign had an effect on him. And it actually is very captivating to see this guard speaking about that. It really makes you realize that something did happen there.
And within days or weeks, Hitler and the Nazis poured across the border into Austria and annexed Hitler's birthplace. Yes. And again, this mirrors the prophecy of the Virgin Mary at Fatima in 1917.
That's right. And the Russian connection there, because in the second secret, it described how Russia needed to be consecrated or blessed. It's another word for to be blessed, for this to be avoided. And so one might ask, well, what does Hitler have to do with Russia? And in this case, what happened is there was a pact made after that light was seen in the sky. It was a pact made between Nazi Germany and communist Russia.
The Molotov-Ribbentrop Accord, I believe, was it not?
That's right. Yeah, that's the name of the accord. And so that accord allowed both parties to ravage Poland, and they both agreed that they would not stop each other from ravaging Poland. and that they would share the spoils from that war. And so it was in that way when Russia signed that pact with the Nazis, it was in that way that Russia became a catalyst for the war to begin.
And in Paul, I was just going to say we should, and if we back up to 1917, just a few short weeks after the final appearance of the Virgin Mary in Fatima, of course, the Bolshevik Revolution succeeded and Russia became the Communist Soviet Union.
That's right. On October 13, the last apparition took place. There was a spectacular miracle that was witnessed by there was an estimated 70,000 people. And the children said that the Blessed Virgin told them that the war was going to end, but that people needed to amend their lives. So it was just days after that, like you say, that the Russian Revolution broke out. And it's very interesting. The children knew that Russia was going to be the catalyst. They knew that Russia was the country that needed to be blessed. But they didn't know even what Russia was. They thought that it was a woman. Hmm. And so, so when the Russian Revolution broke out, they could not have known that this would even be happening.
Right. And I think it's important to note, and I've made this point a number of times, being a Greek Orthodox, that the idea of consecrating Russia does not mean converting Russia, because Russia is an Orthodox country. I mean, it was certainly stifled during the 80 plus years of communism, or 70 plus years of communism, and we're seeing Orthodoxy now flourish in Russia. But it doesn't mean convert Russia from Orthodox to Catholic. It simply means the Vatican, the Pope, and the bishops need to bless Russia. What is the big picture, the 30,000 foot view? Only, I suppose, the Blessed Virgin Mary knows that.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's not to consecrate does not mean to convert. It does exactly mean it's kind of like a blessing. But the precise definition of a consecration means to set aside for a holy purpose. And, what that holy purpose is, I guess we'll witness it when the time comes. There have been, many things said about that, but it seems that it has something to do with bringing or ushering in a time of peace. I believe it has to do with ushering in a time of religious freedom, because there isn't religious freedom from what I understand in Russia. It's not an absolute freedom, and that would probably bring about a renewed fervor in people's faith in God.
Right. You would think it would be something fairly simple to do in the 100 years since the Virgin Mary asked the Pope and the bishops to bless Russia. That would be, something very simple. And yet it hasn't happened. And we'll talk about that a little bit further later on. But let's get to the third secret, because this is the Lollapalooza, really. This is the one that remains shrouded in mystery.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So the third secret has been shrouded in mystery ever since the 1940s, because it was in the 1940s, during World War II, actually, that the first two secrets were published. And the third secret, it was known that it existed, and there was even a Hollywood film made about the Fatima prophecies in the 1950s, and it was nominated for an Academy Award in 1953. So everybody knew about the Fatima prophecies, and everybody knew about this third secret, and everybody was aware, or I should say at least most Catholics around the world anyway, were aware that this third secret was supposed to be published in 1960. And what happened was 1960 came, and the Vatican decided not to publish it.
Let me just stop you there for a second, Paul, if I might. We should point out that at this point in the early 1920s, Lucia, the eldest of the three children, became a Dorothean nun.
Yes.
Now, did she write all of these prophecies down?
So the prophecies, she needed to learn to write, and it was while she was a Dorothean nun that she learned to read and write. And I believe it was, I don't have the exact dates, but I believe it was in the 1930s that she was approached by the bishop, and the bishop began asking her questions about what happened in Fatima. And he began asking questions about the two cousins that were with her to try to understand what their character was like, and you know, the level of their faith, and where their families, who their families were, what kind of people they were. So they started asking many questions like this, and so Lucia started to provide the answers to all these questions in what is known as her memoirs now. I think she wrote about 6 memoirs, and these memoirs contain all of the information from the questions that were answered.
So are we to take it on faith, I guess, that in the intervening, the 15 years or so, since the final apparition to when she actually put pen to paper and started writing these down, that she was able to remember everything almost word for word from the Virgin Mary? Or was it possible, was there another visitation or some sort of a communication while she was writing these?
My understanding is that she... this information was very much ingrained in her memories. You can imagine if something so spectacular happened, you don't forget the details very easily. So I believe that part of it is on faith that, yes, we have to accept that she's remembered these to some extent. But there also had been additional apparitions that took place through her life. For example, When the children reported that the Blessed Virgin appeared to them in July to reveal these three secrets, the second secret, the Blessed Virgin tells Lucia, "I will return to ask for the consecration of Russia," and she in fact does return to ask for the consecration of Russia in 1929. So these apparitions did continue to take place more privately with Lucia.
Well, Paul, I want to shift the conversation from matters of the eternal soul, as we're talking about the Blessed Virgin Mary, to something far more temporary but still important, and that's the human body and how we can live longer and healthier lives. Our bodies deserve the best, but how do we choose the best nutritional supplements or even know what's in them? Life Extension has been helping people stay healthy for over 35 years. Just like with the foods you eat, the quality, purity, and potency of the ingredients in your nutritional supplements really do matter. Life Extension supplements set the gold standard for supporting weight loss, heart, brain, bone, joint, eye, skin, sexual health, and so much more. Their formulas are based on the latest scientific research and clinically validated dosages. That's one reason why 98% of their customers recommend Life Extension to their friends and family. Every Life Extension product is backed by a total satisfaction guarantee. The bottom line, Life Extension is the brand you can trust with your health. Check out Life Extension products with special savings. Visit smartclickidea.com. That's smartclickidea.com. Smartclickidea.com.
Theoretical physicists say that there's as many as 12 hyperdimensions. Here are just 3 of them. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Conspiracy Unlimited. Pretty cool, huh? Here's an extra one. Conspiracy Unlimited. Hey, how about one more? Conspiracy Unlimited. And the great thing is we have 6 hyperdimensions left. Conspiracy Unlimited. 5.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Or what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the hosts of the Underworld podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it, and we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I am a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Paul Stark is the director of a brand new documentary titled The Vatican Deception. So we mentioned the third secret. Now, my understanding is that Lucia had, on the orders of the Virgin Mary, had sealed these in an envelope, or the third secret. And it was, as you mentioned just a short while ago, it was to be released in 1960. I mean, that was an explicit, precise date to be released in 1960. Explain the timing.
So that's an error. It actually is a very interesting date. And it's especially interesting because if you look at the Vatican document that was published, in this Vatican document, it is stated that, I think it was Cardinal Bertone who asked, I don't remember if it's him, but somebody from the Vatican asked Sister Lucia if there was an interpretation for the third secret and why that date. They asked why specifically 1960. And according to the Vatican document, Lucia responded that it was just an arbitrary date. That she didn't choose it, that the Blessed Virgin didn't choose it, that Lucia just felt it was a date that was, it'll make sense for people to open the letter at that point. But when you read the letter itself, it says that the Blessed Virgin requested in 1960 that this letter be opened. So right there you have a contradiction, and that's why that makes the date so interesting. It makes us wonder what's going on with that. Now, we can look at 1960 and ask ourselves what's going on in 1960 that makes it particularly special. And when you start to uncover some of the details, you see that the Second Vatican Council was called in 1959. And by 1960, the Catholic Church was aware that this council was going to take place and that they were going to be renewing the church, that they were going to be bringing in new ideas, fresh ideas. And it seems that that was particularly the thing that the third secret was warning about.
Well, we should talk about the prophecy dealing with the apostasy, which also, mm-hmm. and for many Catholics, many conservative-minded Catholics, Vatican II was sort of the manifestation of that apostasy. But what did the Virgin Mary say about an apostasy in the church?
We actually don't have the actual text, and this is the problem. And this is why I did so much research on this, because if we had the actual text, we would obviously have the full picture. And it seems that the Vatican would have a motive not to publish a document that would speak about the apostasy at the top levels of the church. But what we have, though, is the testimonies of people who have read the third secret. And it's from that we're able to sort of get a sense of what's happening with this secret, what it's about. And one of the most prominent witnesses we know of about this third secret is a man named Father Malachi Martin. He was in the Vatican during the time that these changes were taking place. And he had the opportunity to read The Third Secret. And although he was under oath not to reveal its exact details, he did speak about it in general terms. And one of the things that he said about it, he said that it involves two very specific things. Number one, he said it involves a great amount of suffering globally, that the world would see an amount of suffering that the world has never seen before. That's the first one. The second thing that he said about it is that it has to do with a wholesale apostasy in the church, throughout the church. And, you know, I know a lot of people, probably especially Catholics, might think to themselves, well, you know, I don't think that we would see an apostasy. And they don't realize that we are actually living these times where there is an apostasy. The argument is that, coming back to the image of hell, you know, the church used to preach that hell is real and that we needed to, you know, live our lives in a way that we wouldn't go there. But the church doesn't teach that anymore. That used to be a fundamental part of their doctrine, and they don't teach that anymore. So these are the kind of signs that we have today that maybe there is a change in the doctrine. Maybe there is an apostasy. And for those who don't know what apostasy means, it's an abandonment of your beliefs. If you truly believed that there was a hell, you would live your life differently. You would live your life in a way that you wouldn't go there. But if you don't believe there's a hell, then you'll live your life in such a way that, you know, maybe you'll just try to enjoy the best of it while you're here on earth.
Well, and there are millions of Catholics who see Vatican II as the apostasy, because the of course the mass is altered. We have a watering down of the Pope's powers.
Yes, that's right. And those are critical. Those go right to the very core of the Catholic faith. When you change the mass, what you're doing is you're changing the lifeblood of the church itself, because nothing is more sacred than the mass itself. And so when you tamper with that, you're changing its heart, its very heart and lifeblood. The other thing you mentioned, which was correct, is the watering down of papal authority. And a church or a Catholic church cannot be Catholic if there is not what we call the supreme pontiff, the Pope, who is very much a monarch. He is at the very top of this hierarchy. But we don't have that today. As you were referring to with the Vatican Council, there were things that changed during the Council. And one of the major things was this idea of papal authority. The Pope was stripped of his authority as the supreme pontiff. And when you don't have that, you don't have Catholicism.
So which was the first Pope to open the envelope containing the third secret as transcribed by Sister Lucia?
The first Pope was John Paul II. My mistake. The first Pope was John the 23rd, and he opened it in 1958, I believe it was. He opened it in the presence of a cardinal, I believe at the time he was a Monsignor, by the name of Capovilla. And when he opened this secret, according to the evidence, he said that this was did not concern his pontificate, and he closed the envelope and said that it had nothing to do with their times. So that, John the 23rd was the first to open the secret.
All right. There's also something supposedly, and I don't know who this comes from, perhaps Malachi Martin or others, but that the third secret speaks of the attempted murder or the martyring of a pope. And some suggest that that points to 1981 and obviously the attempt on Pope John, the attempt on the life of Pope John Paul II by this Bulgarian KGB agent.
Yes, when, it'd help if we backtrack a little bit here, because what you're referring to is something that was published by the Vatican in the year 2000. And it seems that after many years of pressure or something prompted the Vatican to finally decide to publish the Third Secret of Fatima. And so they published a document in the year 2000, in June of 2000. And what this document was a vision, another vision. And this time it was a vision of what they called a bishop in white walking through a city of ruins. And this bishop came to a mountain of ruins, and he started to climb this mountain, and behind him there were cardinals and bishops and lay people that followed. And at the top of that mountain was a big wooden cross. And as the bishop in white, which some people are referring to as the Pope, as he was climbing this mountain, he shot down and killed by bullets and arrows. And on both sides of the cross, at the top of this mountain, there were two angels carrying what they call an aspersarium, and they were collecting the blood of martyrs. So this was the vision published by the Vatican. And so when we had the attempted assassination on John Paul II in 1981, and the interesting thing with that is that it was on May the 13th, which was the anniversary of when the apparitions began in the first place. Mm. So the attempted assassination on John Paul II, it seemed to make sense to refer to that and say he was the bishop in white in the Third Secret, in the vision of the Third Secret. So the Vatican is trying to tell us that assassination attempt fulfilled the vision of the Third Secret, and that everything is now behind us. But what doesn't make sense with that is a number of things. First of all, in the vision, the Bishop of White is climbing a mountain of ruins. There were no mountain of ruins in the time when John Paul II was shot. Secondly, the vision describes the Pope as being shot and killed. In this case, the Pope was not killed. Trying to think of some of the other things. Oh, the other thing is with the date. So this assassination attempt took place in 1981. Well, what does that have to do with 1960? It doesn't make any sense. If the secret was supposed to be opened in 1960 and it was written on the envelope itself that the Blessed Virgin asked for it to be published in 1960, and Lucia said that it was supposed to be opened in 1960 because then it will be more clear. So why would that have anything to do with 1981? Hmm. It just didn't make any sense. And why did the Vatican then wait until the year 2000 to publish this? If it had to do with 1981, why didn't they just publish it that year or the next year and say, okay, well, there it is, it's all done.
Right. The other thing that we should mention here, I want to go back to the consecration, because Pope John Paul II had, there was another opportunity for him to consecrate Russia, but it had to be done in unison with bishops all around the world. What happened?
The instructions of Fatima were very specific and very explicit. And they said that the Pope was supposed to consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary in unison with all of the bishops of the world. And it's interesting because there were some questions that came back from Lucius. Some people the bishops that were investigating this were asking questions to Lucia about the details of this. And the way she explained it was that the bishops could come to Rome to be with the Pope, or they could do it in their own diocese. But in any case, it had to be at the same time. So it was explained that if the consecration was done during the day in Rome, there might be other parts in the world where it was done in the middle of the night, with you know, depending on what country they were from. And it was also explained that, you know, there might be some bishops who would be unable to do it in some circumstances because of the suppression of religious freedom.
Or some so that just simply refused. Some refused to do it. But didn't Pope John Paul II essentially get overruled? Didn't he, moments before, didn't he say, "May I mention Russia?" And he was overruled,
yes.
Wasn't he?
That's right. But so the request was supposed to include all of the bishops. And nobody is allowed to refuse. They had to do it to the extent that they could. And if they couldn't do it publicly, because it had to be a public event, if they couldn't do it publicly, they could do it, you know, they could do it privately if their lives were in danger or if because they were being suppressed. So in 1984, when John Paul II did this consecration, he asked the bishops, but he didn't have the participation of all of them, first of all. Second of all, you're right in saying that when the time came for him to consecrate, it was a consecration of the world. That was the ceremony.
Right.
He wasn't allowed to mention Russia. But when the time came to say the words of consecration of the world, he paused. And he actually asked, "Can I name Russia?" So it was obviously on his mind at the time. He knew that Russia was the one that was supposed to be named. And what's actually interesting with this is that at the time when he asked the question, there were people around him saying, "No, no, you cannot name Russia."
In other words, the Pope himself being overruled. We don't have a lot of time here. We may have to come back and do a part two, but let me ask you, obviously the name of the documentary, The Vatican Deception, the nature of the deception having to do with the third secret is, the big question is, in 2000, did they release the entirety of the third secret? Now, one of the central characters in your film, the late Father Nicholas Gruner of the Fatima Center, here in Fort Erie, Ontario, is dedicated his life really to getting the Vatican to release the third secret in its entirety. The missing pieces, the Vatican denies it. They say, no, we released it all in 2000.
That's right. So the way I'm explaining the deception is this way. We have the Vatican's official position, which is that the full third secret of Fatima has been published, and the consecration of Russia has been done. So that's the official position. But we also have testimonies from other Vatican insiders and from evidence that show us the opposite, that the third secret is not fully published and that the consecration of Russia has not been done. So obviously, both sides of this equation can't be right. And so we can obviously conclude then that somebody is deceiving us. And so that's where the title of the film comes from, The Vatican Deception.
And as I mentioned, that for me, this documentary, which is fabulous, and people really ought to get out and see it, and we'll give them a website where they can check for details and maybe a theater or where it will be screened. But to me, it is, as I say, a political thriller, because one of the threads in this documentary has to do with Nicholas Gruner, the late Father Nicholas Gruner, and his attempt, for decades to get the Vatican, to fess up really and admit that they haven't really released the entire, third secret. But the extent to which the Vatican, has gone or went to silence him, is just incredible. And I don't want to give everything away in the documentary, but there's a scene that opens the film where we see, evidence that the Vatican actually airbrushed, Father Nicholas Gruner out of photographs as he approached, Pope Benedict, during a blessing of Our Lady of Fatima.
Yeah. That's right. And, you know, this is exactly it. This is incredible, the lengths to which they will go to silence one of their own. This is the idea. This is one of their own priests that they're silencing. And it's interesting because I look at it this way. If you are a member of the hierarchy and you're out of line in some way, you're preaching heresy or you're doing something that's wrong, the Vatican has a lot of tools that they can use to fix that. Like, as an example, you know, we've known in the past that they would excommunicate somebody for doing something that's wrong. And in this case, it's interesting because if Father Gruner was doing something that was wrong, that was so wrong, why wouldn't the Vatican then just use some of these tools that were at their disposal? Why wouldn't they excommunicate him? Why wouldn't they find some way of, you know, of reprimanding him? But they didn't. This was the thing that was interesting. They didn't because it seems that they couldn't, because you can't punish somebody for not doing something wrong. It seemed that Father Gruner was doing the promotion of Fatima, that he was fully in his right. He didn't need permission to do it. And the Vatican couldn't say something against it. And therefore, they would resort to these odd methods instead, these which you would I would call covert types of methods to silence him.
Yes, it's very curious what the Vatican is trying to hide, what they are so afraid of. But let me conclude. I'm not sure if Father Gabriel Amorth is featured in the documentary, but he is the Vatican's chief exorcist. And back in 2010, let me quote from him. Again, this is the chief exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth, in 2010, quote, "The devil resides in the Vatican, and you can see the consequences. He can remain hidden or speak in different languages or even appear to be sympathetic. At times he makes fun of me, but I'm a man who is happy in his work." So there you go.
Yeah, and I mean, that opens up a whole other, I can think of a lot that I could say about that, but the simplest thing would be this. Shortly after the Second Vatican Council, there is a quote, a famous or infamous quote from Pope Paul VI, who said, "From some fissure, the smoke of Satan has entered the church."
All right. Well, we will now leave it to the listener, if they wish to pursue more, to get on out to the theater. How can they get more information about the Vatican deception and perhaps see it in the theater?
The best way to get the up-to-date information is to go to the film's website, which is at www.thevaticandeception.com. And if people click on the menu, they can see a number of selections. And one of those is a link called Theater Locations. And if they click on that, they'll be able to see all of the places that the film is playing presently. At the moment, we have it playing at the Kingsway Theatre in Toronto. There's going to be another showing at the CineStars Mississauga Theatre on March the 4th, and we're working on expanding this. It seems like there's, as the word gets out, we're getting more and more theatres on board.
TheVaticanDeception.com. Director, producer, Paul Starr. Congratulations. It's a real thriller, political thriller, and I highly, highly recommend it. Thank you so much, Paul.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, Richard.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Vatican Deception. Great documentary. I recommend it. Before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs and head on up the stairs to the old Schlafensack, I want to give you a heads up on what's coming up next on Conspiracy Unlimited. Just a reminder about our weekly contest, real easy to get in on. Every Friday we do a draw. The winner wins a CD of my Strange Planet radio feature collection, volumes 1 and 2. All you need to do is rate and review this podcast, grab a screenshot of that, and then email it to me at richardserrett1@gmail.com. Richard Serrett, S as in Simon, Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T, rate@gmail.com. Again, rate, review, screenshot, email it to me. Include your name and address, your mailing address. That's important. Every Friday, I draw from a list of all of those emails that come in, and the winner wins either Volume 1 or Volume 2 of my Strange Planet CD. Is weight loss on your mind? It certainly remains on mine, even as we head into February. Unfortunately, the commitment to weight loss often fades, usually within the first 90 days. The key is having the right mindset. Getting thin and staying that way lies in our thought processes, and hypnotherapy can make all the difference. Now, clinical hypnotherapist Dr. Steve G. Jones has created a set of 5 audio hypnotic sessions that apply the power of hypnosis to reprogram the mind and replace bad habits with vibrant, positive, new habits to help you achieve natural and long-lasting weight loss. Weight loss hypnotherapy really works, and it's available now at a special discount. Isn't it time to lose those extra pounds? Check out weight loss hypnotherapy right now at smartclicksavings.com. That's smartclicksavings.com. Coming up next time on Conspiracy Unlimited, forget global warming, we're facing a major ice age in our future. Join me in conversation with Robert Felix, the author of Not by Fire, But by Ice. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.